Hershey, welcome back to Open Air.
It's always a treat to be here and to see you.
And for me to be on stage with you now, instead of in the studios, it's quite a treat. And congratulations again on already setting records here in Mountain View with your musical portrayal, this time of Putin's favorite gay composer, Tchaikovsky.
Now. Actually, what Putin did say about him, Putin says, with this heavy Russian, he said, I'll tell you exactly what he says. Well, he may have been this. It's not the thing we like about him, though.
Really? He said that?
Something to that. It was that it's not what we like about him.
Well, acknowledgement is at least some progress.
Well, that's important, and a lot of this story deals with what that means. The idea of having a hero who, if he were alive today, would not be able to live freely as he was not able to live in his own day, and that's complicated. And what's interesting is it drives this particular show, because I've gotten invited to perform this piece in Russia. So how do you perform a piece like this in a place where it's against the law to perform a piece like this? Complicated.
Well, naturally, there are thoughts of collusion, given that there are a lot of performing arts organizations are doing Tchaikovsky, Rachmaninoff, Shostakovich. And I'm wondering if it's the same kind of phenomena where you get a new car, suddenly you notice everyone driving that same type of car.
Well, you know, I was booked to do this before the Russian collusion stuff started. Although I have to say something funny. So I stopped for lunch the other day at Harris Ranch on my drive up. And one of the horses who had won, who had become famous or something, funny, a big poster, and his name was Soviet Problem. I couldn't help but laugh. It's right there in the restaurant. Welcome to our famous horse, Soviet Problem. But anyway, so are people doing a lot of this? Well, I think people are doing Russian things because it's good stuff. I don't think the story in this case happens to be Tchaikovsky's, and it was timely, but taking on this story happened way before this became news, and it was very interesting to watch the audiences as the news cycle kept on changing. And that's been a fascinating journey with this piece, which is now on stage for about a year, a little more than a year.
You worked on it first in San Diego.
It opened in San Diego a year ago, January. Yeah, exactly a year ago this week. And the news cycle has changed. And interestingly, because we discussed Beethoven together, when I approached the artistic director who booked this the moment he saw it, I said, let's switch out. Let's do Beethoven second, meaning in this, and let's do Tchaikovsky, you know, in June when I did the Beethoven earlier, because I said it's hot news and so on. And he said, oh, I don't think you have anything to worry about. I said, I'm not worried about anything. He says, no, but really nothing to worry about. I said, why that? He says, oh, it's going to be even bigger news a year from now. And it turns out he was right. What's really happening, God only knows. But what is interesting is to deal with something that is a rising issue in this country, and that is people's rights, and what it means to have rights and freedom of speech, and what does freedom of speech mean, and can you live freely as who you are, and is that okay? Is that, I mean, we're going through some very interesting and complicated and I think frightening times.
Well, Tchaikovsky is one of those composers who can accurately be defined as a tortured composer, but you prefer the term haunted.
Haunted is good. Tortured. He wasn't tortured enough not to get up and work, you know. And he did have a life of fun and friends and so on and so forth. But he was haunted by a number of things. His proclivities would be one of them. Also, you know, it's a very interesting thing. You have this even today, the idea of there are leading men in the arts who do not wish to have their private lives, not exposed, but they don't wish to have their private lives on the front page.
And then those that are exposing their private parts.
Well, that's a whole lot. I mean, just, you know. But interestingly enough, this story becomes complicated because of that as well, because Tchaikovsky had similar kind of issues going on. So you're dealing on a lot of levels with stuff that we're seeing today. It was interesting, I just played this. Well, I've been playing it all year, but I played it in London, and it was interesting. There were a lot of these pieces, they don't cater to, but they appeal to Berlin, and they appeal to an older crowd that, you know, and then, of course, young people who love music as well, a nostalgic crowd, I want to say, not an older crowd, a nostalgic nostalgia crowd. This one seems to appeal fully to people in their 20s and 30s, which is not that it doesn't appeal to everybody else, but I'm finding an audience that is would say to Irving Berlin, oh, well, he's an old composer, or Beethoven, well, that's a serious composer, finding something very relevant in terms of people who don't generally come to classical music events in this particular piece, because it speaks to them in terms of what's going on politically.
And I think broader, in a broader sense, that even critics of the 21st century are coming around with a different attitude towards Tchaikovsky's music.
Well, you know, in the old days, the famous critic in Vienna, it was Hanslick, who I think it says, oh, you can hear it stinking. Music.
Right.
It says, you see the vodka and you hear it stinking. And, you know, so many critics of the early, including in New York. I mean, it wasn't just a European thing or a Russian thing, that he wears his heart on his sleeve, that it's too overt, that it's too romantic, it's too obvious. Oh, maybe, but it's also exceptionally well-crafted. It's extremely brilliant. You know, whatever you want to say about the effect on you, this is musicianship at its highest level. You know, as far as I'm concerned, like with all art, it takes time. And, you know, it goes through cycles of what's good and what's bad. I mean, look, Bach in his day was not particularly fanciful. And later, as people started to find him, 100 years after he was dead, all of a sudden it became more popular. It's the same thing with all art, you know.
Perhaps Bach is a future subject?
Well, here's a good thing about Bach. One, I love the music, of course. Who wouldn't? It's the greatest music of all time. The other, he was fat. And this will allow me to eat whatever I want. You know, I mean, all these other composers, they weren't particularly fat, and it's been torture. You know, you want to go to the good lunch in Mountain View, and you can't go to the good lunch in Mountain View. It doesn't work because you can't fit in the costume the next day. So all those buffets, it just doesn't work out. You know, that's I mean, everybody who thinks that this is all just glamour and fun, I have news for you. You don't get to eat what you want. But Bach, on the other hand, may be a good subject for this reason.
Well, getting back to the haunted or the tortured nature of this composer, I think a great deal of what makes Tchaikovsky is that struggle, whether it's sexual or otherwise. I don't think we'd want to hear a perfectly adjusted Tchaikovsky's music. It'd be rather bland, I would think.
Well, the interesting thing is that we are crystal clear, whereas it's not crystal clear with other composers. With Tchaikovsky, we are crystal clear what drives him and his composing, because he writes about it, because it took up so much of his mind. I mean, he was a real letter writer, thousands upon thousands of letters, in particular to ones to his patroness, von Meck, and not to mention the ones to his brother and the one to his nephew and so on and so forth, where he really reveals and speaks quite overtly about what drives him and his, I think you can use your word, or we can use your word, this tortured sense of sexuality. You know, the kind of why me thing. And it's not about being homosexual as much as is being one way when you can't live openly that way. So it's not that he detested who he was, I think, as an individual, but I think he detested how he had to live within the context of life at the time, and I think it frightened him. I didn't think he wanted to be outed by anybody, because, of course, that was propaganda to be used against someone, and there's theories for that. But we are clear that his music is largely driven by secret desires and the inability to
openly express.
Well, you know what is said about, you know, Russian dancers during the Soviet period is, you know, why do they dance so expressively? Because they dance the way they cannot speak, you know. Mm. So it's that part is interesting,
right,
as well.
Right. We know so much about Tchaikovsky. You mentioned his patroness, Nadezhda von Meck. Let's talk about her a little bit and how she works into this production.
Well, the whole thing was a little bit weird, you know. But what is interesting,
for those that don't know anything about her.
Well, yeah. Nadezhda von Meck was the wife of a very rich railway steel baron or something to this effect. And she took on artists, two of them who were very interesting, of course, Tchaikovsky and Debussy, or who she called Bussy. She liked calling him Bussy. But here's what I always found interesting about Bussy and Tchaikovsky is that Tchaikovsky was not allowed to visit her or see her face to face and so on. She wanted to keep the image of him perfect. However, Debussy lived in the house and had affairs with the whole household.
was that Tchaikovsky's rule or her rule?
Hers. She made it very clear in early writing, and these things are quoted in the show, and they're quoted verbatim, that she did not, she wanted to hold him in continuous high regard, or any man who creates such perfect music is a perfect man, and that's how I wish to keep him, you know. Whereas Debussy was in the house and meandering from bedroom to bedroom. My sense is that there was a, at the very least, gossip that he was of a homosexual or different persuasion or something that would not be of interest to her. And I think that probably would have tortured her, falling in love somehow with a man who could not simply give her back what she needed. Not that Debussy ever did, but, you know, we do know that she did have an affair at the end of her marriage with a man who was, I mean, that was the beginning of her last child. I mean, you know, that's how her last child was born. Her husband found out and he died of a broken heart. It's a very sad story, but quite literally, in fact. So the sense is that she must have known to a degree what was going on, because she didn't want him in the household, but she had Debussy in the household. So it's very interesting and adds to the intrigue of what went on there and what it meant to be known or found out, or how serious this was, or how it was looked at in those days. And unfortunately, what we're seeing in the news today, you know?
Mm-hmm. You have a trusted researcher at your hand, Megan Maya. And these shows, for the most part, are self-directed. But I'm wondering how you pare things down. There's so much material that you could use, especially in someone like Tchaikovsky, just on the musical front, let alone when you get into his personal life.
Well, in terms of direction, I do work with Trevor, who does direct these things. I mean, when you speak self-direction, the musical thrust is self-directed. The theatrical one is worked out with him and my team, of course. You know, Trevor Hay. But one of the things that is quite clear, I being the musician and the speaker, that the thrust, the emotional thrust of the whole thing and musical thrust has to come from me. Megan is remarkable in what she puts together informationally, but it's like having a talking library, which is really great. I pushed a button, I need this. See, I know enough in order to put all of it together. What I don't know, of course, is where to find an exact quote. And because of the way her brain works and because how she catalogs things, I can say, I know this quote, it comes from somewhere here. Can you tell me exactly the date, where the quote comes from, and what it is exactly? And she will go and hunt that up, and that's how we'll put things together. In terms of your question about the music, one of the things that has become clear to me from the very beginning is that you have to do something popular. You can't do, you know, all that. As I always had the interest, well, why don't we do the things that nobody knows? Well, that's all fine and good, but, you know, you have to do things that people recognize. And the other side of that is that you do things that people recognize, but they have no idea where it comes from or why.
Right.
So I pepper these things with the information as to what the context of all these things are, which makes then doing popular music interesting. As opposed to saying, well, here's just the first concerto, or here's just a Nutcracker, and, you know, isn't it cool that, and then I wrote this.
Mm-hmm.
So when we know the context of it, it makes it, it gives it more of a theatrical thrust. And also, raison d'être, it gives it its reason for being. In terms of choosing it, you have so much to choose from for Tchaikovsky, because largely everything is familiar, you know. Hundreds of hours of music that's familiar. And so what do you choose? Well, you do know you have to choose, you know, 1812 Overture, because you can't not inform people where that comes from, or nor of the fact you cannot not inform them how much he hated it, which is important, and why he hated it. You know, things from the Nutcracker, which was not popular in its day, which is actually derided by the public and the critics. However, as time went on, 30s, 40s, 50s, it began to become a staple. But when Tchaikovsky died, and for the next 40 years, it was not.
Mm-hmm. And can you imagine it ever being out of the repertoire now? It's just stunning, stunning music.
Not only just out of the repertoire, but the notion that every city doesn't have multiple productions of at Christmas time.
Or modern interpretations of it, like Mark Morris and the Hard Nut.
The Hard Nut, or there's another one. One of my friends is doing one in Russia, the hip-hop Nutcracker, something like this. I mean, these things are popular melodies from the Fifth Symphony, the Concerti, you know, whether it be violin, whether it be piano, the opera, there's so much.
We opened up with that excerpt from the first piano concerto, and I've always, as a flutist, I've always been so jealous. You've got two incredible concertos, and then we even hear his beautiful flute writing in the opening of the second movement of the first piano concerto. It's like, why didn't he write a flute concerto, gosh darn it?
Because the flute player wasn't cute enough. I don't know. You know, you never know. You never know what the story is. But there are three piano concertos. Oh. Huh? The third one is actually interesting. Most people think that the Sixth Symphony is the last symphony. It's not the last piece. It's not. It's the third piano concerto, which was written after. So all these theories about he wrote it as a suicide note and then killed himself, kind of debunked. With the fact that you have this third concerto, that's this joyous kind of thing. In terms of the things that he wrote for, it's interesting. It was very clear that he composed on paper. He did not compose at the piano. So I think he heard things as they were interesting to him, and he would go for walks in the forest, walks among the birch trees at Klin, you know, which is where his favorite place to compose with his notebook. He would hear things, obviously, with a perfect ear and perfect pitch, note them down and come home and work at his desk, staring out at trees. He would not, and this was a tradition from the very beginning that Rubinstein taught him, do not work at the piano because then you're stuck with the didactic behavior of the piano, you know. And then if you're not at the piano, then you can do all kinds of things you can imagine. And so he did write that beautiful, but there's a lot of beautiful flute stuff. I mean, you could go make a concerto of the stuff you pull from all the repertoire.
Yeah.
There's lots of great passages all over the place. They're really beautiful.
Yeah. We mentioned the contributions of Trevor Hay, of course, and Megan. Did Megan uncover anything that really surprised you that you weren't expecting?
Yeah. Complicated stuff. I didn't know what a rent boy was. I didn't know that...
Such a sheltered life.
Oh, I'm just so... First of all, people say, don't you know what goes on today? I said, no, I kind of know what went on 300 years ago, but today I'm not so... But, you know, I didn't know the term. I mean, I know what it is. With how this was fashionable in the day and it was sort of expected. And, you know, and this brings in a lot of questions to what we're seeing today. You know, child protection laws, what is the age of consent, what is consent, you know, all the things that we're facing, you know, in the arts and in every other field. As somebody asked me, you know, what about harassment, I said the idea is never to be hysterical, because that takes away from how terribly serious all of this is. It's to deal with the serious side of all of this and to educate, that people should understand what harassment is, so that, you know, the instincts don't take them to the wrong places. And we don't have the education yet in the system to understand that, you know, we know no means no, we know those things, but there are all kinds of levels of what touching means, how, you know, and so on and so forth. And unfortunately, Tchaikovsky lived at a time where young boys were meant to service, you know. And so when you learn that and you find that out, you sort of go, I mean, your first instinct is, ooh, gross, oh my God. But then one has to set all this in the context of a time and understand that it's time. That doesn't make any of it okay, but what it means is that we need to educate even more to understand the things that can happen when attention is not paid.
Well, we can go back to Greek and Roman times as well. And
absolutely, and drag it forth. And it's, you know, the idea of all this is attention must be paid. Education is so important to understand that young people understand what's right and what's wrong, so that there is a basis to go forth, and so on and so forth. But, you know, that was a surprising thing to find out, because we don't want to think these kinds of things of our composers or our artists or our heroes. It's like we started out, Putin said, well, this is not what we like about him, but he's a great composer. You know, sexuality is not anything to like or dislike. It is. It just is. In quotations, it is, and that's all there is to it. However, when you know, satisfying one's needs by having young boys around, because that seems to be a tradition, this is complicated, you know? I think it was surprising. The harder part was how to not shy away from this within the context of a piece about this, and yet address it for the, I think we can say, horrific feeling that it is, the complicated, sad situation that it is. And so that had to be walked very fine. Because it's interesting. He doesn't seem, in any of the research, to be a predator. He seems to be questioning why he does this, mm-hmm. why he goes towards younger boys. And there is an explanation that I was given by a very prominent psychiatrist in New York, as we discussed this, that because he lost his mother, both by abandonment and then she died at a very young age, he turned to his male counterparts at school. Now, it's a very interesting thing that, you know, this is in psychiatric terms. So I've been told, I don't know anything about this, that young men who turn into older men who want young men are it's because something happened to them in their childhood, and that's where they find love and affection. But I think Tchaikovsky was looking for love and affection, but I do understand that not every somebody with a pedophilic nature, that's not what they're necessarily looking for. So that becomes yet another complicated situation, but I do believe in Tchaikovsky's place, he was just so devoid of a love that filled him that he kept on looking, and he was terrified of being found out, but he wasn't a predator. You know, he wasn't going just buying rent boys or something like this. That was hard to find out. Because, you know, you play the concerto, it's so bold. It's, you know, you play the other pieces, they're all interesting. But you don't think of him in that context.
Well, it's like we don't think of, you know, we tend to compartmentalize our attitude toward Wagner.
Yeah. Horrible man. But I think, you know, and here comes the next question is, can you separate the artist from the art? And is that necessary? And what was I reading? It was Socrates who said something to the effect of one must, or something to this effect. Maybe Socrates. I think I read it the other day and I don't remember who it was attributed to. That becomes complicated. I mean, okay, and then we look at a recent situation or any one of these, leaving the Harvey Weinsteins of the world aside, but you look at a Kevin Spacey who was a working artist. You know, like him or not like his work, he was a working artist and he was considered by many a very fine actor. So is that any of that connected to his private behavior, which was unacceptable? You know, can you separate the two? Mm-hmm. Can more to the point, all those things that we loved for years ago and we would go and see, can you go see them again and separate the idea? Mm-hmm. I think that's very complicated. Mm-hmm. So how to make a story like this live on a stage and not feel that it's violating the audience and their sense of the music at the same time. It's offering an understanding and dealing with the truth. Tough stuff. Mm-hmm. Tough stuff to take on. And yet it opens a lot of questions I think people are interested in nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about the influence of Megan and Trevor on the show. Could you share with us how much Leo contributed to this particular show? And tell us who Leo is.
Leo is the dog, and everybody laughs at me that when I start talking about Leo, I become like a baby. Okay, Leo is our dog. Kim's in my dog. Leo is the second in a generation of black standard poodles.
I always love that phrase, standard, but not like the deluxe model. It's the standard poodle.
He's a standard. Well, the deluxe one is big. He's a huge. Those are called the Royals. The standard poodle, you know, because then there's the mini, the this, the that, but this is one. This one turned out to be like a horse. He's huge. He takes children around the park. It's, you know, but he's our little love. I mean, basically, if one wants to die, one wants to come back as Kim and Hershey's dog, because that is the most spoiled animal on the face of planet Earth.
You, in fact, brought him with you to Mountain View, didn't you?
Not this time, no. This time he didn't come because too much travel, you know. But having Leo around is the most joyous thing. And, you know, he's now 7, but we had his uncle for 14 years. So we're going on 21 years of poodles. And I cried so much when we lost his uncle. He was just old, 14 and a half. I said, never having a dog again. This is too painful. I can't do this again. 2 days later, I called the breeder.
does Leo, does Chance have a line? Is there any line? And so she says, yes, we're breeding and so on and so forth. In 3 months, you can have your pick of the litter.
Nice.
And I named Leo before he was born. So, I mean, and he's not Leo like a regular kind of Leonard or something. No, he's Leopold.
Leopold. Okay, very smart. Well, Hershey, let's go out with some of your favorite Tchaikovsky. What would you like to play for us?
Some of my favorite Tchaikovsky. Something I think, let's find something sensitive, because Tchaikovsky, you know, there's so many delicate things and beautiful things that he does. Let's find something kind of beautiful and sensitive. Ah, the first melody that I ever heard of Tchaikovsky that was the one that, in fact, sort of woke my eyes up to the whole thing.
And with that, I will thank you for taking some time today.
Thank you for having me.